Good morning. My name is Joe, and I am an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. With me today is Kate, who is also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is People Helping People. I'd like to thank WHLL 1450 AM Radio for allowing us the opportunity to share something about our alcoholism and the solutions we have found in Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions expressed here this morning are solely those of the individual who expressed them and not those of WHLL 1450 AM or of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. People Helping People is focused on how AA can provide help to people who have a problem with drinking. Alcoholics can be helped to stop drinking with the support of other alcoholics who have achieved sobriety and who gladly share how they did it. Like the people here today, one alcoholic helping another is the basic premise of the Fellowship of AA. Well over 2.9 million people in over 150 countries follow the AA recovery program. Here in Western Massachusetts, we have over 400 AA meetings a week, with approximately 6,000 members staying away from a drink one day at a time. The American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association recognize alcoholism as a disease. It is a progressive illness that can never be cured, but like some diseases, can be arrested. We feel that this disease is a combination of a physical sensitivity to alcohol coupled with a mental obsession. The best and short description of what AA is and how it works that I know of is what we call the preamble. I'll read it to you now. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now, I'd like to introduce my guest, Kate, who will briefly tell us what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. After that, I'll provide you with some information about how and where to get help. Kate?
Hello, my name is Kate, and I am an alcoholic. I'm here by God's grace and my cooperation with that grace. In Alcoholics Anonymous, they talk about higher power. And I choose to call mine God, but you can find whatever higher power is yours, as long as it's not you. I got sober in February of 1997, and from drugs and alcohol. But first, let me tell you what happened. So, I grew up in a family that loved to drink, and there was a lot of happiness and partying in my family, and I just thought it was a rite of passage just to pick up my drink, and I did, about 13 years old. And I didn't drink every weekend, and I didn't drink every day, but I drank at every opportunity I could get my hands on alcohol. So what happened was, through my high school years, I had an inkling that I was drinking differently than my friends, They would call me the next day after a keg party and tell me what I did, all the silly things that I did, and I was embarrassed. And I was that person with the Southern Comfort in her back pocket, just in case the keg ran out. I drank for effect, for sure. I did well through high school. I was the top 5% of my class. I was able to hold three jobs, be on three varsity teams, one JV team, and still be able to go out once in a while and drink and get drunk. So, excuse me. So at that time, I really didn't think that alcohol was a problem. I was being successful. I got accepted into a prestigious college in Boston, and that's when alcohol made my first decision for me. I didn't go to that college. I was too afraid, full of fear. I wasn't going to be good enough. How was I going to drink the way I needed to? And have to study hard to stay in this school. So I made up several excuses and I didn't go to that school. I ended up going to a school down in West Hartford. And there I learned how to drink during the week. I was always a weekend drinker. And there was little tricks like don't take classes that are at 8 o'clock, excuse me, that are at 8 o'clock in the morning. Take classes that start at 11 or noon time. So if you drink the night before, you can still make it to class. And I just did what all the other, dorm mates did. And we ran around and we partied. Still didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. Although at age 18, I was fired indirectly for my alcoholism. I was very, very, very hungover one day when I went into the swimming pool. I was a lifeguard, and it was my turn to lock up, and I didn't check the bathing rooms, the dressing rooms, and I ended up locking somebody in the pool. And she had to call 911, and they had to get her out. And as a result of that, I was fired. But I didn't think that was because I was a drinker. So I left that college. I did 2 years in that college, and then I went to UMass Amherst, and I got completely lost there. I didn't make any friends really up there, and every time I had a breathable second, I would be down in Holyoke. I'm from Holyoke. I'd be down in Holyoke drinking, looking for my friends, and not studying. So I flunked out of there, and I quickly got a job as a bartender, and I had arrived. It was the best thing ever for me. I was also working for a nonprofit part-time, so I had two jobs. And I started having small panic attacks at this time. Cocaine had entered into my life by this time. And all the people that I was hanging around with, every single one of them was drinking and drugging the way I was. I saw people that I graduated high school with, and I would avoid them because they looked like they were professionals. They looked like they were doing the right thing, and I didn't want to have to explain the reason why I didn't graduate college, and I was working part-time, two part-time jobs. I started to get embarrassed about myself. I started feeling low about myself. I started feeling like I was different. I started feeling like everybody else had the guidebook to life, and I didn't have it. And I started feeling apart from society. And the drinking and drugging just got worse and worse over time. I met my first husband in that bar I worked at. And, we tried to give it a go. And I can't talk for him, but for me, I was in no way, shape, or form emotionally available for a relationship. But I didn't know that at the time. I just thought that I was doing what society expected me to do, you know, to meet somebody that was responsible, that loved me, that could give me a good home. And then we ended up living together, and then we got engaged, and then I got pregnant. And that's the way that went. Then we got married. And I, during that pregnancy, my alcoholism was so advanced that I could not stop drinking during that pregnancy. Thank God my son's okay. He's a physician's assistant now, so I guess he's okay. But alcohol really robbed me of the beauty of being pregnant. I was always worried about who was going to find me out, you know, because I didn't want my husband to know I was drinking and drugging. I didn't want this one to find out, that one to find out. I was completely under the radar. So I had that beautiful baby in 1990, and I looked at that baby, and all I could think of was, what a responsibility, 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 responsibility. And how am I going to be able to drink and drug the way I need to at this point and be a mother to him? And the answer was I couldn't do both. I didn't know that answer was the answer then, but it eventually became that. And at the hospital, you know, after I had, you know, looked at my son and was grateful that he looked normal. He didn't have fetal alcohol syndrome. I was ringing the nurse's bell, you know, you're late for that 4 p.m. Percocet, you know, you're late, give me the Percocet. And that stole from my alone time with my son. I was not worried about my son at that point. I was worried about the next. And I didn't know I had a problem at this point. You know, I thought that drugs and alcohol were keeping me together. They weren't tearing me down. So shortly after I got home from the hospital with my beautiful baby, I fought for my right to be able to go out and drink one time a week. I needed to go out with my girls and drink. And he better not say anything about it. I earned it because I'm going to be working hard every day, taking care of this kid, this responsibility, and you better, like, sense of entitlement, you know? So I did. And one night turned into two nights, turned into three nights, turned into I have another job as a bartender. And now my mother steps in and she starts taking care of my baby. And at least I'm very, very grateful to her because at least he was safe. I was bartending, going to all kinds of after hours parties. And when you're a bartender, people know you're a bartender. So when you go to other bars, people buy you drinks. So it was pretty crazy back then, you know. I started getting panic attacks, probably in my late 20s, really bad panic attacks where I would call the ambulance and the ambulance would come and I'd decline them. I got on Xanax at that point for my panic attacks. And I didn't understand that if I got up the next day and didn't drink the hair of the dog that bit me, then I was going to get anxiety, you know. So that was part of my late drinking. I started drinking in the morning. I would drink Coors Light. I would do a Bloody Mary. I would smoke a joint. I would drink a bunch of water. And, excuse me. And that would fix me for the day, you know. And I would go out. When I went out, I didn't get back home until 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. When people were getting up, I was going to bed. You know, and talk about feeling ripped from society and not a part of society. I remember, you know, coming home one day after partying all night and looking out my window and seeing somebody mowing their lawn and seeing another guy putting his baby in the car seat to take the baby somewhere. And I couldn't understand how they could do that. How can they do that? How can they do that? I felt so apart from that, like I could never do that anymore. And I still didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. So some things happened. Some things got put in my life. And I made it to an AA meeting one time, and I visited AA, and I thought it was a joke, and I felt sorry for the people in AA because they couldn't drink. And what do you mean you're powerless over alcohol? What are you guys, a bunch of wimps? Of course I have power over alcohol, you know. And then I left the meeting and went out and drank. And I had to do that a few times until one time when my buttocks was completely on fire, I decided to call one of my friends that was already in AA to come and pick me up and take me to a meeting. And this is the meeting that stuck. I went to that meeting. I was hurting. I hadn't partied in 3 days. I was shaky, sweaty. I didn't even know what detox was back then. Had no idea what detox was. And if I would have known, I probably wouldn't have gone anyway. So I was at my first AA meeting, and it was in the cellar of a church in Northampton. And everybody was shiny and happy to see each other and hugging each other. And I said to myself, how can they be so happy when I'm so miserable? How can that happen? I'll never, ever be a part of this. And so I stayed for the whole meeting. I can't tell you what they said at the meeting. I can't remember. All I wanted to do was get home quickly. But that didn't happen. My friend took me to an ice cream place in Northampton, and he introduced me to a woman that would become my sponsor later on. So I started an IOP at Holyoke Hospital, and there I learned the facts about my disease. And I started identifying with the people that were there and the videos that they were showing. And I thought to myself, I might have this thing called alcoholism. I'm not sure. But one of the things about going to IOP, you have to go to a meeting every day. So I did. I went to a meeting every day, and every day I went to a meeting, I didn't drink. And the days added up to months and added up to years, you know. And I was proud of myself, you know. I got 30 days, and they give you a chip at 30 days at the meeting. And I started making friends at the meeting, and I started feeling a part of. I started getting hope. You know, I started having a plan for the future. And my life suddenly got bright, and I felt like maybe, just maybe, I could be part of this society that I felt so apart from. So, you know, one of the things that Alcoholics Anonymous gives us the opportunity to do is to experience the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's 12 of them. But when you're super new, you don't have to worry about that. You just have to come to meetings. They told me 30 meetings in 30 days. Sit up front. Women with women, men with men. You know, listen. So I got a sponsor. I got a sponsor, and we started doing that. We started doing those steps, and my life changed because I didn't know that all those years that I spent drinking and drugging, my development was arrested. And so I had the emotional mentality of about a 13-year-old when I got in the rooms, and I was chronologically 31. And I knew how to slam doors and stomp my feet and call you really horrible names, but I didn't know how to talk to you if I had a problem with you. I didn't know how to love. I didn't know how to feel good. I didn't know how to feel bad. I didn't know how to feel. And so these steps were the keys that opened the door to the rest of my life. Fitting in, you know, being a woman of grace and dignity, being a person that actually paid my bills, actually took a shower, you know, washed my clothes. I mean, that's where I was at, you know, before I came. Like, all that was, you know, was tentative, you know, was based upon my, you know, my drinking, you know, whether I had clean clothes or a clean body. And so I started feeling a part of. I sponsor other women, and I, like I said, I have a sponsor. I still go to meetings even after 23 years. I go to meetings because I still want to give back to what was so freely given to me and hopefully help another alcoholic. So if you think that maybe you have what I have, you might want to listen to Joe. He'll tell you how to hook up with Alcoholics Anonymous in this area. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate. That's a great message. You know, you touched on a couple of topics, you know, the steps, you know, meetings. One of the questions I want to ask, though, is that, you know, what does AA cost? Does AA cost anything?
AA costs nothing. However, when you're at a meeting, you're going to see a basket being passed around. And if you want to put some money in the basket, that's fine, because AA doesn't affiliate itself with any outside entities. So when you go to a meeting, that particular meeting pays rent to that church or that business office that you meet in. So they have to pay for the coffee and everything else. But you don't have to put any money in the basket.
Yeah, you mentioned a sponsor. You know, what is a sponsor and why are they important?
A sponsor is a person, number one, that has a sponsor, number two, that has gone through the steps. And what a sponsor does for a person that comes in new is show them the in and outs of AA, show them how to act at a meeting, what the different meetings are, because there's different kinds of meetings. There's speaker meetings, there's step meetings, there's discussion meetings, and they explain all of that to you. Plus, it's a touch point for you, because the sponsor probably will tell you to call them, and you can tell them about your day, and your sponsor can call you on some stuff if they hear some stuff going south on you. They can talk to you about that.
Okay. Once again, thank you, Kate, for sharing your story. And I would like to thank WHLL 1450 AM again, and Kate for being here. Before we go, I would like to make the audience aware of two AA committees that are available to the general public and to the professional community. They are the Public Information Committee, which I am a part of, and the Cooperation with the Professional Community Committee. For more information, please call our Western Mass Intergroup at 413-532-2111. You can also write them at Western Mass Intergroup, 474 Pleasant Street, Holyoke, Mass, 01401. Mm-mm. Nope, they got the wrong zip code. It's 01040. Okay, that's the correct zip code. Or reach them online at westernmassaa.org. Western Mass Intergroup number is in the telephone directory and is also a 24-hour hotline. If you ever need to talk to someone, I'll repeat that number. It's 413-532-2111. If you or someone you know is experiencing difficulty accessing an AA meeting, please contact our Accessibilities Committee at 413-532-3752.
No.
For more information regarding Al-Anon or Alateen, please call 413-782-3406. Both of these lines are 24 hours. Thank you for listening, and please remember, you don't have to stop drinking alone.